All right.
Well, I've seen you now on the Discord. I know that you noted who you are there by your name. I did, obviously, from the Discord. I didn't notice the Dutch last name, which is not an uncommon name.
Yeah.
So I've known bunches of folks with, I won't say it right now, just in case, you know. But anyway, so it's great to see your face and great to get a chance to talk to you.
Yeah, you too. I've been looking forward to this. Yeah. My grandpa immigrated from Netherlands, or Holland specifically, right after World War II. So that's where the Dutch name comes from. I'm sure you've heard this. He used to tell this little joke, you know, if you ain't Dutch, you ain't much.
Yeah.
And then the response is, you know, you can tell a Dutchman, but you can't tell him much, you know? So.
Well, what's on your mind today, John? What do you want to do with our time?
Yeah. I mean, I guess I can go into a little bit about who I am and my story, I suppose.
Yeah, please do.
So my mom and dad, my mom grew up she was raised Catholic. My dad grew up in an AG church. And so when they met in college, they kind of got involved in the charismatic stuff. I don't know if you would call it second or third wave charismatic, whatever. An interesting, you know, charismatic story. So before I was born, you know, that, you know, they were having some friends like pray over me and, you know, whatever. And so, one of my parents' friends, when she was praying, had this like vision of me, you know, being born, like holding a Bible in my hand, which is, so it's an interesting,
you're little still young. Thing. So,
yeah. Yeah. Well, I'm not on track to become like the next NT Wright or anything. And I don't know if I could, but, okay.
We've already got one. We don't need two.
Yes. No, that's a good point. Yeah. Yeah. But you know, I'm very interested in, you know, the Bible and theology and stuff, and that'll kind of come out as I keep going here. But I grew up in this kind of Bethel adjacent church in the Midwest. And so I had this, I don't know, kind of as a kid at this summer camp, I had this kind of first charismatic conversion experience. And so that was, I think that, I don't know, you know, when I, you know, became a Christian or whatever, whatever that means. But I guess kind of as time went on in high school, I was, you know, like I was kind of more nominal at some point. So, you know, if you'd ask me if I believe in God and I was a Christian, I would probably say yes, but I wasn't really like pursuing it. You know, I guess you could say like my personal teleology that I kind of constructed for myself was pointing in different directions, like, you know, with sports and academics, you know, specifically like swimming was, you know, such a big part of my life then. And so that was kind of what I built up. It's like, okay, this is, you know, I didn't like think about it, but it's just what happened. You know, this is like, this is my life. This is kind of what it is. And so basically there were, you know, a series of kind of really personal and like emotional events that kind of happened to me at the end of senior year of high school. You know, one of which included, you know, like, well, swimming is over now, you know, I'm not going to college for it. And like, it's this thing that I poured in so much time into. And so there is like, kind of like a little meaning crisis. It's like, okay, what do I do with my life now? Right. And so that kind of shattered this like facade that I had been pursuing. And so, there was a lot of like purposeless and meaningless in my life, I think at that point. And so right before I started college, like literally the day before, I kind of had this experience where I was like, you know, God, I've had enough of this. I want to like come back and just, you know, do like, you know, I can see this isn't working. I can see that, you know, this is not providing meaning, whatever this is. So I want to, you know, return. And so, I guess I kind of did. you know, it hasn't been like super smooth after that, but after then, I joined InterVarsity on the campus that I go to. And so I was a student leader in that, and I really, you know, tried to participate in that and kind of found community in it. Kind of at this point, let's see, I'm studying electrical engineering, and so I'm in my senior year, and so I'm going to graduate soon and then go on to a master's. But anyways,
good. So and still you have time to listen to videos even as a student? Wow. Yeah.
I think between walking between classes before COVID,
about that.
Yeah. 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 And then exercising, I'd listen. So I was like, okay. Right after that kind of conversion experience a few years ago, I was starting to kind of delve into the intellectual stuff. And so, you know, through that's where I discovered Peterson. And then, you know, there's a friend of mine in Ivy that I was talking to about like the IDW, and you know, he's like, hey, you should check out this guy. He's like the pastor of the IDW. I'm like, okay, that's interesting. I don't think the IW has a Christian. And I'm like, so I'm like, okay. So I did. And then I've been, you know, listening to, I don't know, whenever I started in 2018, I think I've listened to, you know, almost every one of your videos and podcasts and stuff.
Must be in good shape.
Yeah. I mean, yeah, well, 1.5 speed helps. So in the past, you know, I was always about 3 or 4 months behind. My rate of listening was about at your rate of production.
Maybe I'll take a break and you can catch up.
yeah. Well, that's what I kind of did. I was like, okay, I like the Bible Project. I like all these other podcasts I'm listening to, but I really want to see if I can kind of, you know, especially once COVID hit, I actually had more time to, listen, you know, Apple podcasts, not the YouTube so much. So I can do other things, but, and so I got caught up, I don't know, not long ago, maybe a week or two ago, to where you currently are. So,
oh, wow. Congratulations.
And I mean, through you, I kind of discovered, you know, Verveke and Peugeot and Tom Holland, and, you know, I read Dominion and, you know, tried to listen to Awakening from the Meaning Crisis, but yeah, it was
hard sometimes.
I listened to all 50 of them, but I can't say that I necessarily like understood or retained a lot. So I don't know. I might listen to it at some point again. But anyways, so I think, you know, recently I think I'm trying to, you know, figure out where I am, you know, theologically and with the faith, because I think I've had a bit of like, you know, disillusionment with kind of evangelicalism and stuff. I love like all of the charismatic stuff, most of it, I should say, a lot of it, like healing people and like speaking in tongues and like certain kind of, you know, pursuing of the Holy Spirit and such. And at the same time, like, I'm not convinced that like the modern iteration is necessarily doing it in the right way. Not like I know the right way, but there's a disconnect to it. And so I've been moving in a more kind of sacramental direction, I think. Mm-hmm. I don't see myself becoming like a Catholic or an Orthodox. I mean, I would be open to it, but it would be,
you're never gonna able to get back on the Discord now. They're gonna swarm right. you. Those sacramentalists, they're just taking over.
I know. I'm
on your side. I'm not I got the beard, but I'm not wearing a robe.
Yeah, don't have the funny hat or that's right. I don't know.
No hat.
it is funny. It's like, it's how many of, I mean, especially Orthodox, because like, you know, I may have known that they existed, but I didn't know anything about them. And so
I know. I had the same thing. It's like they're all over the place now, just in this tiny little corner. Mm-hmm. To actually find an Orthodox church takes some doing, but I was traveling someplace. It was here in Northern California because we don't go far now because of COVID, and there was a strip mall, and I noticed like a classic storefront, probably a Pentecostal church, and right next door it was some, you know, Eastern European Orthodox Catholic right thing right next door to it. Looked just as dumpy, and I thought, I guess that's kind of how you got to start out. Probably 12 people yeah. in there going through the liturgy. So it's a fascinating development.
Oh, it totally is. And like the difference between like my church as a kid, you know, at one point we were having services in a high school gym, you know, yeah. like yeah. because we didn't have a building.
Yeah.
And, you know, I mean that, you know, for charismatic, you know, that doesn't make a difference. You know, no. it's like if the Holy no. Spirit's there, you're set. Right. You know,
that's
like,
right. Right. Especially if you got speakers and a good musician, you know, off you go, yes. you're going to experiencing the worship of angels before you know it. And,
yes.
and then as many of those churches, they'll start out in a gym and they'll get big and then they'll have their building campaign. I mean, that's the process that they go through. And there's huge churches around Sacramento just like that.
Mm. Yeah. I mean, like Bethel is not too far from you guys, obviously.
No, and no, a couple hours up the road.
Yeah. My parents are huge fans of, you know, Bill Johnson and Chris Valentin and that, like, and, you know, and I mean, I like them too. I guess part of me figuring out where I'm going is, you know, listening to folks like them and seeing like, okay, I love a lot of what they're saying. And at the same time, I'm trying to tease this stuff out. It's like, okay, so, you know, I like the healings, the healing type yeah. stuff. I like yeah. a lot of these things, you know, but, you know, some of the, you know, Jesus is my boyfriend songs, not, you know, so much, right?
You're not looking for a boyfriend.
Right. Nope, that's for sure. and so, you know, I think the direction I'm going in is, like sort of a high church Anglicanism almost.
Yeah.
I haven't like, and this is, I mean, this has kind of been a recent development, so I really haven't been able to pursue it super much with COVID. Yeah. It's been, you know, it's been difficult, to actually, you know, so I haven't actually had the chance yet to go to one of their services and, you know, see what it's like.
Yeah. Your journey's just starting. You're still in college. I mean, there's going to be twists and turns in your story that you can't anticipate. And, but that's good. Who knows? Maybe that dream comes to pass. I mean, there are dreams that people have had about me and dreams that I've had that I still go back to and ponder. And, you know, that's why when I listen to a lot of these sort of miracle-less atheists and they're sort of disparaging of miracles, I just think, gosh, you just have not been out enough. You haven't lived outside of North America. Mm-hmm. You haven't hung out with the Bethel crew. You haven't seen stuff. And, you know, if you see stuff and say, I just don't know, I have more respect for that than just always you need to sort of be a hardcore cynic to just, you know, wave it all away. There's too much weird stuff to wave it all away. So.
Right. No, I totally agree. I mean, like, it seems to have something to do with, like, you know, I mean, it's definitely something to do with, you know, openness versus, I can't remember, you know, non-openness, whatever the word is. You know, it's like, you know, somebody like Sam Harris and John MacArthur would be in the exact same camp in that because they have, you know,
I never
like,
put those two together.
It's, right. It's like this fundamentalist, you know, like,
somebody should make a meme of that for the Discord. Sam Harris and John MacArthur.
Yep. Our arm in arm, just, you know, like.
Oh, I'm sorry. I don't mean to derail your conversation. So I should shut up.
No, yeah, it's funny. No, I just made that connection now, so it's good. I mean, like, this, they both have this, you know, uber fundamentalist mindset, and you know, it's like, you know, the Bible on one side, you know, the Bible of, you know, however we like to interpret it on one side, and the Bible of rationalism on the other, you know.
Yeah.
And so I think, you know, I mean, like, I've seen a few discussions of like, in the Discord, and I think even in some of your conversations of like, well, is there some sort of mapping between these, you know, personality types and denominations? And, you know, it seems, anecdotally, like there is, especially like the charismatic stuff, like totally, like, you know, because I'm like, I know for me, like, I'm a very
introverts like, kind of, in a charismatic church that's really getting lit, you know, they're gonna be wanting some liturgy. Please have it on paper. Let me know what's coming next.
Well, and I think that's kind of part of it for me. I mean, I do have a very kind of, you know, Spock-like personality in a sense, very introverted, very, you know, but I think what's actually been helpful about the whole charismatic thing is that it has, I think, helped me get in touch with my emotions to an extent that I would not have in, say, like a, you know, First Baptist Southern whatever kind of church. And so that actually has been helpful because, you know, I think it's helped me kind of have this, you know, intimate connection with God and like, you know, personal prayer times and like, you know, I mean, I guess, you know, it seems like some people have struggles with, you know, quote unquote, feeling God's presence or something. And like,
and some people
have never really had much of a problem with that.
That's good.
Yeah. And which is good. And it's like, I can all chalk that up to, you know, the blessings of being raised in that. And so, but like, I think at the same time, like my brother-in-law, he's very, he's joined an Anglican church with my sister, and they're, you know, he's very into the sacramental theology type thing. And he was very much an evangelical as, you know, in college, he was big in IV and everything. And so he's kind of been pointing me at least in this theological direction of maybe communion isn't just this thing that we do once a month, and you know, you just take the cup. Oh, okay, now we're good, we're set. You know, we listen to the pastor, you know, hour long, you know, rousing sermon. Okay, and we'll, you know, sip. You know,
there's this little thing that we do. If we stop doing it, people get upset. So just do it and don't ask too many questions.
Yeah, exactly. And you know, I feel like, well, what can the church offer that is different than from anything that the world can offer, right? And to me, it's like the world can give you a Tony Robbins talk like any, you know, evangelical pastor, you know, with his chops could get up there and, you know, do a rousing sermon. Any, like, a lot of secular music is better than a lot of the CCM Christian music, you know? And it's like, okay, so what are we as the church making available to people that the world cannot? And to me, it's, you know, increasingly the answer to that is, you know, the real body and blood in of Christ in the sacraments. And, you know, whether that's transubstantiation or consubstantiation, you know, whatever. I'm not committed to anything.
Real there. Presence. You just go, Calvin had it. Real good. Presence. Real presence. It's just a lot easier than those big words. Just say real presence.
Yeah.
Say, well, what is real? Well, now you can have to muddle around with some big words. Just use a little 4-letter one, real. It'll get you in plenty of trouble.
Yeah, exactly. And I think, you know, that's actually one of the things my brother-in-law, you know, I'm, you know, we're not, really, we're definitely not like Calvinists, but he definitely like
definitely not Calvinists.
He's like,
want to be some of those people,
right? Those people, right? Well, and this is the weird thing is that whenever like I hear you talk about like, oh, so I'm a Calvinist, so I believe X. It's like whenever you say something that I'm like, I agree with that, you know, You know, it's like, it's a strange thing, because I've had, like, you know, discussions with a lot of my friends who are kind of, you know, very Baptist, young, restless, reformed area. And so I think what I'm kind of piecing together is there's a difference between, you know, this traditional reformed sort of like, you know, going back 1600 years and then through, you know, people like Bavinck and Kuyper and et cetera. And from the difference, then this sort of like mishmash of evangelical Baptist reformed kind of, you know, Frankenstein monster that's, and, you know, I love those guys. Like, they're, you know, so excited about the Lord, but it's, you know, well, I can't sign on to it. Right.
Yeah. Well, reformed, and, you know, if you look at the history, you know, what happens in the Reformation, the Lutherans sort of keep with the Lutheran thing. And John Calvin, as a second generation reformer, sort of offers a broader summary out of which grows, you know, and people pick and choose. Of course, Arminians grow out of Calvinism. And so even, and so when you say, well, I'm a Calvinist versus an Arminian, you're really talking about a more of a 17th century fight. But almost most evangelicals, including many Pentecostals, it sort of grows out of this Calvinism that was, so you've got the Anabaptists, which are the Mennonites, the Brethren, some of those folks. You've got the Lutherans, you've got the Roman Catholics, and just about all the other evangelicals, theologically, their roots go back to Calvinism, even if they're pushing back against what the young, restless, and reformed Calvinists like to emphasize. And so when people hear me and I don't seem sufficiently young, restless, and reformed, that's sort of okay. And I do come out of, you know, the part of the Dutch Calvinism that is in, you know, fairly tight communion with the Westminster Confession and some of those things. But Calvin sort of finished out the Reformation in a broad way that so many other groups emerged from. So that's why, you know, evangelicalism so often has these elements of Calvinism, even if they're not emphasizing divine election or some of these things. But you'll find all this tell stuff in broad evangelicals around the West.
Right. And like, I can, you know, still see that kind of thing. Like my pastor will get up and, you know, my charismatic church that I grew up in, like, and he'll very much like, you know, these kind of, you know, 16th, 17th century points and like kind of like arguments even. And, you know, yeah. this is like a charismatic church that, you know, even would see itself and kind of, oh, this is the new thing that just came out, you know, Azusa Street. And then, you know, and then like, you know, to the Toronto revival and IHOP and all of these different things, but it's so grounded. And like, reading Dominion has helped me so much understand that. It's like, okay, where is this all coming from? It's like, well, we've been swimming in these waters for, you know, 2000 years. Yeah. And it's not like it's really, you know, changed substantially, at least in our kind of whatever.
When I was your age, John Wimber was Bill Johnson. And John Wimber, I mean, you can, your parents probably would have a book or two of his out there, you know, Power Evangelism and Power Healing. And John Wimber launched the, you know, the Vineyard movement. And the Vineyard were sort of Presbyterian charismatics. And, you know, so history, that's why history is so helpful, because you can see, even if you're pushing back against something, you always take something of what you're pushing back against with you. It's by virtue of the dynamic of the relationship. So I welcome the conversation I had just before you with someone who grew up Assemblies of God, and that'll post, you know, if you want this conversation to be posted, that'll post before this one, because I try to keep them in order if I can, because it makes a little bit more sense. But you know, it's, we're, you know, I welcome the rise of the Orthodox on the American scene, because they bring ancient riches from afar that some of us who have mostly only known the Western Church have not had a chance to look at or enjoy. And so I think this is all part of the Holy Spirit's work in the church. And so it's, and that's part of the reason that this whole, you know, my last 3 years have been just so much fun to, because I'm obviously high in openness, or I wouldn't be where I am today. But no, I like that in the Discord server and in this estuary of sorts, you know, we've got Nick. You know, have you talked to Nick from Bethel?
Nick, I've heard William? Him on the
Discord
charismatic
server?
Yeah, I know of him. I heard him on the charismatic randomizing randos conversation.
Yeah.
I heard some of his story. I haven't talked to him directly.
But... Oh, you should hunt him down and talk to him, because it's, you know, and you know what's so amazing to me is that. So everyone's so excited about the Divine Liturgy and the sacramental traditions, and you're going to have, you know, Sacramento is filled with charismatic Ukrainians and Slavs and, you know, people who last thing I want is that church. I'm going to come to Sacramento and, you know, we're going to bust out the electric guitar and sing love songs to Jesus, baby, because that's the stuff. And I think God is just doing his thing with us, and it's a beautiful thing.
Yeah, and he really is. And I mean, like, the that conversation, that, you know, that Rando's conversation with the charismatic, I mean, that really opened my eyes in a way, in like I'm understanding the critique about, like, like some of the, you know, Bethel stuff, where, you know, it's kind of like, you know, it's Oprah. It's like, you get healing and you get healing and you get healing, you know. But, you know, like,
but there's some of that to Jesus, and it comes through the Gospels, you know. You know, I love how, you know, Jesus is on one hand not just a quivering massive availability. I mean, people will come up to him and make demands on him, and he'll say something to them that people today look at and say, that wasn't very nice. Well, Jesus didn't go about being nice. Other times someone will come up and make the most audacious, you know, request, and he'll say, absolutely.
Yeah. Right. Yeah.
That's him.
And that is him. That's totally part of it. And I think, like, that's why part of, like, what I like about the healing and the miracles and that sort of thing, because it just seems so, you know, evident to me from the scriptures that is, you know, absolutely part of the church's mission. Now, the angle that I was kind of hearing from that conversation was like the how important the symbolic aspects of it, you know, when Jesus heals the blind man who goes into the synagogue and shows himself, you know, it's like it's a demonstration of showing how blind the, you know, the Pharisees or the Jewish leaders, you know, were in that situation, right? And that, like, you know, that opened my eyes too, so to speak, right? And so and trying to think about that, but, you know, obviously at the same time, it's not like God is constrained in any sort of way to say, oh, well, if there's this symbolic way, if there's not a symbolic way of doing it, I can't do it. Right. You know, that's not who he is. You know,
I could do no miracles because there was no symbolism.
Right.
If you had symbolism, this mountain would up and throw itself into the sea.
You know? Yeah. If Peugeot can't illustrate how this mountain is the cosmic mountain with Eden at the top, then nope, you know, you're done.
You're all lost. Sorry. No, and that's right, because I really learned something in that conversation. I learned something from every conversation, but and that's one of the things that you note in the Gospels, is that these enormous miracles of Jesus are deeply symbolic and intentionally so. For example, you know, water to wine. I mean, did that party really need more wine? You know, they ran out, and that's an embarrassment to the host, but and Jesus goes and makes, you know, it, a fun sermon illustration that people often do is maybe you get the plastic water jugs of basically guessing, you know, how many hundreds of gallons of wine Jesus made. And then you look at the population of these communities, you know, how many people were at that wedding, you know, maybe he puts, maybe he makes a gallon of wine for each man, woman, and child at the wedding, but that's the symbolism of it is, and Jesus does it in a way that, and that's another beautiful thing about that story. Nobody knows it except the servants who are the ones, you know, nobody else knows it. Just more wine kept coming. And that's how God works so often, at least I've seen.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. I mean, I think so too. I mean, it's not like it's totally indiscriminate in one sense, but also like, I mean, what I've been trying to figure out is like how we can, you know, kind of, I don't know, unite these two things, but like the whole, all these, you know, really beautiful charismatic things. And yeah. Then also the sacramental stuff and like church tradition. I mean, I read most of Confessions. I got to the philosophical part and it's the philosophical part. I'm kind of like, okay, let's have to go a little more slowly through that once he gets into like time and eternity and stuff. But like, I guess the point is that like the like I'm reading some of the church fathers a little bit more. I have a lot to read yet, but like, and I'm seeing the immense, like, you know, the wisdom and like, you know, the fact that they were so much closer to the biblical authors, the fact that they like, you know, that they devised the canon of scripture with, you know, with the, I think, inspiration of the Holy Spirit, you know, but, you know, it was they who kind of put that together in the councils and all this. And then of course the whole sacramental theology where, you know, the real presence, like, you know, when you partake of communion, like it's like every time you go to church, you're getting Christ, right? Whether you think so, whether you feel it or not, you are getting him, right?
Yeah.
And so like, and to me, like, I haven't investigated it super much, but it seems like the Anglican Church in particular has, like it's incorporated a lot of the charismatic stuff. And it also, with retaining the sacramental stuff and the emphasis on tradition and you know, the, at the same time, the high placement of scripture, you know. And so all of these, you know, because like I don't want it to become like, oh, it's a church of me, it's a church of whatever I you know, my personal, you know, creed. Like, that's never going to happen. But I think once, you know, once this whole COVID situation kind of passes, it's something I'm, you know, really looking forward to pursuing, you know, actually in person, because I think I'm relatively convinced of it from a theological perspective, but that's, you know, that's just one of the P's. Like, I have to integrate the other three.
That's right. You'll have to see if it fits and fits now. And, you know, it's like I say, your journey is just beginning, and it can take you strange places, but God is good. And he's trustworthy, and we hold on to him through the journey. So
absolutely. Yeah. I guess I wanted to, I'm not really sure which to go with. I had a few things, but just briefly. So I've been, I grew up playing a lot of like video games. Right. And so, I think the,
so your Discord, is that from your video game stuff? Cause it's,
yeah. So that, yeah, that avatar is actually, he's a character called Captain Falcon.
Oh, okay.
So he's in this game called Super Smash Bros. And he's like a very kind of beloved character. I'm in a few gaming discords, so that's the main reason that I have an avatar there.
Right.
Just to kind of, you know, show my,
you know,
bear my flag or whatever.
Yep.
So like games like that, and then like, have been, I think the more I think about it, it's like you know, as most of the time as a kid, it's like I either didn't pay attention to or I didn't necessarily understand like the biblical stories or what was being taught in church. Yeah. And so there's a sense in which the first instance I encountered like, oh, this narrative or like of say the hero's journey or these kind of meta narratives that I think, you know, compel people. It was in video games, like, you know, story based that have like these, you know, these kind of immersive stories and these whatever. And so, I definitely don't play video games much at all now. Cause like one of the things that's been conflicting in me is like the extent to which video games are because there's a spectrum, there's kind of two poles. It's like video games are a total waste of time. You know, they're not even like, there's nothing there, like go read a book. Right. And then the other side is, you know, video games, like I have friends who, you know, are, you know, in their 20s and they're like, their life is video games and they are like, you know, it seems like they're content with that. And they're, and I don't like, it's not like they're, you know, trying to figure, you know, poke around in like the meaning crisis or necessarily figure it out. But, and it's not even like they're necessarily addicted to it. And it's like, they're playing World of Warcraft 60 hours a week or something like that.
Yeah.
It's just, that's what they
only
do.
Only 60
part of their hobby and they really enjoy it.
Only 60 yeah, hours.
Well, that's,
I know. I know.
Worse.
I know.
Yeah.
Every waking moment.
Yeah. Yes, exactly. Yeah. And so I've tried to, you know, and I've tried to, I mean, the best way that I found to organize my thoughts is writing. And so I've tried to write about this stuff and try to process it about like, can video games be a sort of conduit for meaning and art? I mean, I certainly think there are video games out there that you could call works of art.
Oh, absolutely.
Yeah. And so, you know, if literature and, you know, great paintings or whatever can convey meaning in some way, and, you know, we classify them as art and video games are art, if they can be art, then I could see it's like, well, maybe video games can be some sort of meaning making structure. Now, you know, literature and art has been with us for thousands of years. Video games have been with us for a few decades. So this may be on time.
Barely
that,
a few decades, you know.
Right, barely.
They've only gotten good within 30, 20 years, you know.
Yeah.
First video games are pretty Spartan, not terribly addictive.
Yeah. 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 And so, I mean, and part of the problem is that the whole idea has been polluted so much by the addictive part, you know, sparking people's dopamine receptors, you know, spend more money, play more, you know, have your life revolve around this thing.
Yeah.
But I think there is room for like video games as some sort of meaning making structure. And I'm not like a developer, so I don't know what that would actually look like. But I think, I don't know, I just feel like there's room for it. Like, I mean, one example, it's like Minecraft, right? You know, most popular game maybe ever.
Is it really? Because I'm not of that generation and my children weren't either. So Minecraft, I know it's popular, but
yeah,
I've never played it once.
I think, I think best selling of it's like, you know, over 100 million copies or something like that.
Really?
Something ridiculous.
Wow.
It's like, I think like, Tetris might have more or something, but Tetris is everywhere, right?
Yeah.
Tetris
is simple.
Yeah. Yeah. No, it is. And
Minecraft
isn't. And like part of the very interesting thing about it is like, it's not just another video game where you're interfacing with a simulation. It's also like, it's where the agent within the game is themselves generating, like can generate art, right? Mm-hmm. Like you could create, I mean, there's limitations, but you know, you could create, you know, castles and, you know, whatever you want to create. And like some of the stuff that's out there is just insane.
Yep.
And so I've tried to think about how does this work out? Like, how can I understand this in a way that it's not like video games are a waste of time, but they're also, you know, a potential forum for a lot of meaning making. And I think, I don't know, I could ramble on about it more, but I don't.
That's well, I think it's a good question. And I think your comparisons, I mean, film is the same way. Film, I was thinking about this the other day, how, you know, film you get in film, you integrate story and visuals and music and dialogue and narrative. I mean, there's a compounding. And of course, video games, I mean, photorealism is coming. You know, I've watched, you know, Call of Duty, and, you know, I only play Civilization. That's about the only computer game I play much of. But the, you know, I watch my kids play sometimes. And so you take all of these elements of film, and then you add interactivity to it. And you're right that we are only at the beginning of the potentiality of that medium. And just like with every other powerful thing, you know, there it can go different ways. But with all of the power comes all that responsibility. And yeah, video games can be used to distract, to avoid, or they can, you know, I don't think, just like with all this other new stuff, we're just, it's in its infancy now, and we'll see. But I think you're right that there's power there, and there's art there, and there's potential there. And we'll see. But yeah, and you know, depending on, you know, what people develop, it's just like developing literature. I mean, and story. I mean, when you think about, you go all the way back, what did we have? You know, first language, and then story, you know, comes online, and then you try to write story down, but in its written form, it's different than its spoken form. And I mean, all that continues. So yeah, no, it's true. It's true.
Yeah. I mean, that's reminded me of another book I'm reading, Technopoly, right now, which, you know,
good.
So, good. I know you've mentioned Amusing Ourselves to Death
before. Yeah. I've got Technopoly, but so. I've started it, but I haven't gotten anywhere near far enough in it. Postman is a sharp guy.
And, he is. Yeah.
He's a very astute observer. And
yeah,
very helpful. How far are you in the book? What are you learning?
Let's see, not that far. Yeah, page 42 or something, but you know, he's kind of outlining his kind of structure of, you know, tool making, you know, technocracy, and then technopoly are the three. Hmm. Right. And so, you know, it's helped me kind of balance out, like, maybe like when I've been thinking about video games, you know, reflecting on this has kind of helped me balance out some of my over optimism. It's like, okay, you know, he's even saying that, that while, you know, technology can be used for immense good, but like, look at all these transformations, you know, it's done. And like, you know, he says all of these things about television, and you could put replace social media with television, and it would be the same thing, and it would just be so, like, he's a really prescient guy.
Yeah.
And so I've tried to work that out. So that just made me think of that book. Because yeah, I don't know. I mean, I like, part of the thing is too, I'm an engineer. Like, I work in, I'm still in college, but I'm into kind of like the machine learning area. Right. So like, yeah, you know, reading this Technopoly book is kind of like, you know, it's, you know, it's a good smack upside the head in a sense.
Yeah.
And so I've been trying to like, okay, so how does this fit? How do I integrate this stuff? Work it out so that like, instead of the culture and, you know, religion and everything surrendering to technology, as, you know, there's a sense in which we have during COVID. Instead of that, you know, we are creating it, and we are framing it within this religious meaning making frame. And I mean, I think the way that, like, the way that the church and has tended to do that is through art and through, like, you know, the great cathedrals, and, like, you know, like, going into, like, some of these cathedrals after growing up in high school gym church, you know, big big shift, right? And so
gym church
that's what it was. I mean they have an actual building now.
I know, believe me, when I came to Sacramento, I was doing a lot of church planting with people, and so that's exactly high school gym church. That's exactly what it is.
Yes. Yeah. And so I think that if we can seize on it, I think the church has a unique opportunity to kind of frame this, like, thing with video games that so many people are into, and, you know, not use it as some kitschy, you know, evangelism, you know, let's go convert people thing, but let's create a conduit for meaning, and let's do it well. And, you know, I don't necessarily have the answers to do that myself, but I think there's potential there. So,
Well, and, you know, it's so Sally Joe's been knocking on my door for her second conversation, and, you know, she's engaged me about Protestants and art, and so evangelicals have not always done well with movies, with music, but it is sort of the Protestant way to and again, this gets back into some of this Calvinism, the sphere sovereignty way. But it's figuring out the way the gospel intersects with the medium. You know, 'cause there's Christian video games out there that none of us ever want to play. you just see them in the store, just like a lot of the Christian movies that none of us ever wants to see. It's like, oh, okay. I don't need to see that movie. I know exactly what's going to happen in that movie. I mean, these movies write themselves. And but when Christians do learn the craft and learn the art, and that's where, you know, in some ways, that's where the symbolism and the miracles come together. Because again, back to that theme, that the symbolism, Jesus' miracles were deeply symbolic, and that's the way to understand them. That's he was in some ways, the miracles of Jesus are analogous to video game creation, only Jesus was, you know, Jesus had the Jesus, how can I say it? Jesus had administrator rights to the embedded world we're living in. And so when the storm comes up and the disciples are losing their stuff, Jesus says to the storm, you know, peace, be still, go over there. Looks to the disciples, don't you know who and what I am by now? Come on. You know, you're more afraid of that storm than you are of me. And of course, by stilling the storm, that ended.
Yeah. They were freaked out of him pretty fast, you know. Well, after that.
Storm is one thing. Someone who can tell the storm to shut up is an entirely different thing, which is exactly why in this contemporary frame, we are deeply anxious about God, but the fear of the Lord is the beginning of wisdom. So that's true.
Yeah,
that's true.
Yeah, absolutely.
No, that's a good point. That's a good point. And yeah, we'll see. Well, and it'll be interesting too. You're studying electrical engineering, machine learning. Again, careers are interesting things too, because you leave. So one of my sons left college with a degree in engineering, wanted to do mechanical, but, you know, eventually found a job doing more civil type things in office engineering. And so, you know, that's what he's spending his time doing. And so often you go through college and you think, I'm going to do this. And sometimes that happens, but sometimes a job opens up over here, or you fall in love and you get married and you wind up living over there. And, you know, lots of crazy things happen in life. And that's part of the adventure.
Yeah. Well, that's one of the things that I like, you know, like I'm going to spend, you know, a year doing a master's here where I currently am. And part of me is like afraid. It's like, you know, cause I want to move out west at some point, cause I love the mountains and I love that kind of outdoors.
Yeah.
But some part of me is afraid. It's like, what if I find, you know, some girl that I want to marry, and then, you know, then if I get stuck here, you know, I don't know. It's all speculative. But.
Well, I wasn't going to go to Calvin Seminary in Grand Rapids. I was going to go to Fuller in Southern California, because, you know, who wouldn't want to go down to Southern California and go to Fuller Seminary where class and signs and wonders and all kinds of exciting things were happening. And some of my classmates did, but I met a girl in Grand Rapids, and I knew if I went to California, it would be California or her. So I wound up marrying her, and I got both. So not a bad thing.
Hey, yeah. Yeah, absolutely.
You never know.
Yeah.
Any other last things on your list, John?
Yeah. I mean, just briefly, like, I know I asked a question one point in the Q&A about, like, my brother is a very spiritual but not religious type. And so he just sent me this book. I don't know if you've heard of this book.
Yeah.
Apparently it's very popular. Okay.
It was popular. One of the things that my father did in Patterson was heroin sort of went through the grimy East Coast cities in the 60s and 70s, which set up AIDS. But heroin went through, and a lot of the guys who were working, you know, doing their work to get off heroin, they really liked that book. I have the book. I have a long history of being given books that I don't read, a warning to anyone who sends me books. And so, in fact, I paged through it time and again, and I've still got it on one of my shelves. But did you look at it? What did you think?
I haven't read it yet. I just got it last night. I mean, it's very short, but
yeah, it's like, very short.
You know, it kind of, you know, shows, like, you know, because he's evangelical in his own sort of way, his own sort of, you know, non-spiritual but not religious kind of way.
He's evangelistic.
So he's sending me books like that.
Yeah.
Right. And so, like, I mean, what I'm trying to figure out, it's like, okay, what book can I send him? You know, not like we're having like a little book fight or anything, but like
send him Augustine's Confessions. Send him a church father. He'll look at it like, I was expecting Larry Crabb. Send him Jordan Peterson.
yeah. I mean, I don't know if you had any like particular recommendations, like if there's one book that you would send him that's not like too over confrontational or whatever.
But he's your brother, so he's raised in your household with the same,
raised charismatic, had a deconstruction, and now is like spiritual.
And what have been some of the issues that has sort of have? So you've got one brother who's gone, you know, who's gone Anglican, and your other brother doesn't find church worthwhile. I mean, what's his just not relevant?
Yeah. Yeah, I mean, I think he had some, I mean, part of it is certain experiences he had in church that I think kind of disillusioned him a bit. Yeah. And then, you know, he's kind of, you know, going to college and being exposed to a lot of different people and traditions, he kind of has become this kind of pluralistic, very much like, he's a really smart guy.
Yeah.
He's going to PhD school right now, but he's very much like, you know, spiritual, but not religious, you know.
What kinds of things does he like or study?
He reads a lot of, I don't know, kind of books like The Prophet. He'll read books like that. He likes, you know, a lot of the entrepreneurial kind of like, you know, how to, you know, succeed, get wealth and happiness. Not like he's a prosperity type guy. Like he's, I think there's more to him than that, but like, he's very, he's very driven and very like engaged, and he wants to, like, he's earnestly seeking, like he's not just sitting there, right? So
I don't know, it's book recommendations are hard. And I am a very patient evangelist, as you can tell. I'm a very patient evangelist, because it was interesting to hear James Lindsay on the Christmas party of the Unsafe Space channel basically say, yeah, there are Calvinists out there that don't believe you can actually convert people themselves, that that's the work of the Holy Spirit. And I thought, yeah, that's me. It's the Holy Spirit. So I think I tend to be reticent about the direct assault, because I especially for someone who has been raised in the church, most evangelical direct assaults, you are sort of like Christian movies. You see them coming from across the way. You're like, I know this. And usually the powerful stuff sneaks up on you. And, oh, it's, you know, God works in our lives in lots of different ways. And when he really gets his, when he really gets his hands on us, it's usually, you know, I used to have this thought that don't try to shut God out, because he's got the kind of power that he can destroy the house around you if you're using the house to avoid him. So I don't know. I'd say send him whatever book you're enjoying. So if there's a book that you really enjoyed, Christian or not, share that book with him. Or, you know, you could do some Dostoevsky, because Dostoevsky, even something short like Notes from the Underground, it's not a big book, but boy, it'll work your noodle, especially if we think we are sufficient to ourselves to provide for ourselves what we think we need. Because often if we think we're sufficient to ourselves, it's because we don't really understand how deep our needs list goes. So I would gift them with a book that you enjoyed, whether it would be easily identifiable as overtly Christian or not. That's what I would do. Because chances are, if you're enjoying it, there's something in that book that is connecting with you deeply.
Yeah. Okay. Thanks. I've meant to read some of Dostoevsky at some point. And so
if you're reading Augustine, you can handle Dostoevsky. Augustine's Confessions is, you know, it's a popular book because it's shorter than something like City of God, but it's it's not an easy book. And if you start playing around with, you know, very quickly, I mean, you can pick up the Penguin Classic, and then if you start digging into that book, you realize people have been continuing to try to translate that book, because it's a deeply psychological book, and any translator worth their salt will understand that when you're trying to communicate this kind of thing, it's really hard to try to, you know, what exactly is he talking about? Yeah, there's the pairs, and, you know, but how to really convey these ideas in translation? It's an amazing thing. So
anyway.
I will send this video to you, and you can decide if it's something that you'd be happy with me sharing. I'm sure the other folks on the I've been trying to think of a shorter name for the people on the Bridges of Meaning Discord, and I heard someone say something like Bridgers, so that's probably a good one. I know the Bridgers would like to see it and see your face and get a clearer picture of you. That's good for the community. So
I mean, you can totally share this.
Good.
I think it was very good. It was helpful, and
And I mean, this actually will be a nice pair for the video, the conversation that I just had before you, which is, his name is Mick, and he was also raised Assemblies of God, and now he's in a liturgical church and told the story well. And I'd actually, he's from Fresno. So I'd actually met him at a couple of meetups. So, but this will be a lovely conversation to add to the collection. So I'm glad you found a spot. Yeah. A spot.
Well, thank you. Yeah. Yeah. No, it was a bit fortuitous. I just like reloaded the page one day and there it was, you know, for literally yesterday I set the slot and I was like, okay, let's go. So
yeah. Good. I'm glad you found it. Well, I will see you. I will see you on the bridge.
Yeah.
Take care.
Yeah. Thanks for everything you do. It's been such a blessing. So
good.
Yeah. Good. Bye-bye.
Bye-bye.